I need to introduce us, and there's a real temptation I might call you Sarah Robinson.
That's fine. I was, I've still was Sarah Robinson for longer than I was. I've been Sarah George, though it's now getting close.
So today, this afternoon, I'm in Giggleswick in Yorkshire with Sarah Robinson. Sarah George. Sarah George. She's Sarah George. So I'm drinking tea in her field, which is perfect. It's a really lovely field full of trees. Does that make it a wood?
Yes. Well, I hope so. I was, for years, well, it was just a normal field when we bought it and I started planting trees. And then about 10 years ago, somebody described it to me as a small wood, and I was just so thrilled.
I have to say, having come into it for the first time, it's more woody than fieldy.
That's what we were aiming at, but I thought it wouldn't happen for another 20 years.
Oh, it's great. I'm very jealous. The first question is, where did we first meet?
Where is the easy bit? It was in Clarendon House near Bedford. I've been trying to work out when. I think it must have been about 1985, 86?
I think it might be 86. Yeah, I think it might be 86.
It was, yeah, certainly around the time we were in sixth form, wasn't it?
Or a little bit before.
Possibly final year senior school. But anyway, longer ago than we care to remember,
yes,
probably.
Yes, absolutely. Do you drink tea?
Yes, I do. Although you will notice that I am on a non-tea substance, what my uncle calls ferret, because it bears as much resemblance to ferrets as it does to tea. This is peppermint tea, because if I drink too much tea, I get twitchy.
Oh, yeah, we don't want that. But what's your favourite cup of tea?
Now, my favourite, probably at the moment, is spiced ginger, which, again, isn't proper tea, but is damn good stuff.
Excellent. So the question I'm asking everybody is, how do you respond to the statement Christianity in the UK is not dying but sleeping?
It's a very interesting one. And I did a bit of fortuitous swatting up. Justin Welby has been interviewed in The Guardian this weekend on pretty much that subject. So I'm not going to steal his points of views.
He's stolen my subject.
He's stolen your thunder. It's been 20 years since I've been an active church member. But I'm very much the black sheep in my family. My mother is a Methodist steward. My sister is married to a Baptist pastor, with all that entails. My brother and sister-in-law are both lay preachers in the Methodist church. And my little sister and her husband are very much involved with running an evangelist church. Well, not what they do. He does the music, she does the singing bit. He does the sound. You can edit this. So I see a lot of the church from their perspective, and obviously there's a great range of churches there, although we haven't engaged with the C of E for quite a while. And in all of them, there is still the demographics. My mum, age 74, going on 75, is still one of the younger ones in her church in the Methodists. And there don't seem to be the people coming up behind. Similarly with my brother's church. My little sister's church is much younger. And whether that's... there's still the perception of people our age that we were forced into things like school assemblies, the daily act of worship, which was... I don't know anyone who enjoyed that, especially the people who delivered it. Whether it's still that sort of reaction that's keeping people away from churches, or whether there is Christianity that doesn't take place in organised churches at all. It's whether... it's... and also whether it's unhelpful that it is so part of the heritage that people tend to think of Christianity in terms of cathedral buildings, lovely old churches, which is all very well and good, but it's not a lot to do with Christianity itself. And whether that's all going to... and the visible church tends to get itself involved with a lot of what I consider to be very sterile arguments. and whether that sort of thing will work itself out when with later generations, and it will reappear at a much... I think that Christianity will endure, but in a very different form, and probably at a much lower level than 50, even 20 years ago.
So a lot of the people on the podcast have basically been saying that Christendom is dead. And I think that is what you're saying to me.
Christendom as a... the established church. Now, here I must disagree with the Archbishop, even though he probably knows a bit more about it than me, probably. Only probably I am a librarian. He says that he doesn't think establishment of the church is either a help or a hindrance. I think the fact it is established is an unnecessary baggage. It makes it part of the state. The article pointed out that only Iran is the only other country that has clerics on its legislature, which does make us a bit odd. And all the debate about whether Charles could be head of the Church of England because he's divorced, forgetting the whole Henry VIII thing.
There's precedent for that, isn't there?
Not the most well-known faithful husband. It has been said and said a lot. But I think all of that distracts from... And things like the debate over gay marriage. I think if Jesus had considered gay marriage to be... or even the concept of homosexuality to be important, he might have got round to mentioning it at some point. As far as we know, he didn't.
He didn't talk about it at all.
No. And it wasn't like they wasn't around at that point. The Greeks were...
were experts.
Indeed, yes. there was actually... Anyway, yes, so it wasn't like it wasn't around.
No.
And he, as far as we know, never said anything about it, so why are we so obsessed with it?
That's a very interesting question. I'm going to see Steve Chalk in a couple of weeks' time. We may well touch upon some of those issues then. I've got some other specialist questions for you. I hope you liked these. What's the best thing about archaeology and how does it affect us today?
Archaeology, I gave up being a professional archaeologist when my knees started being really audible going upstairs in wet weather. No, it's a bit too dry today, you can't hear them, but it's quite demanding physically, but the thrill of physically engaging with the physical remains of someone, a piece of pot somebody last touched 2,000 years ago. I mean, it's just cool. I have two colleagues who run the training dig for our first years up on Orkney, and they very kindly let me go once for a week every year. They even more kindly pretend that I'm some sort of use. I'm sure I'm not, I just get to play. And I sit there in this Pictish house, abandoned 1,500 years ago. It still looks like a house. It's got walls, it's got a little cupboard, it's got little steps, and just that physical, visceral connection with our ancestors, it's a real thrill. And I like playing in the mud.
See, I have slightly less muddy connections with... I was probably not as ancient past as that, but... So I do communion once a week in the weekdays, and I get something, a little piece of domestic stuff out of the safe to use. It's made from silver, but it's just effectively I just use it as a plate, put stuff on it, and then I have to wash it and sort it out. And it's been used in that way every week since 1705.
Cool.
So it's not even considered something which we need to do anything special particularly with. It's just what has been used in our church building since then. And there are other things which we use which are possibly older, but we don't, because it's silver, we know how old it is, whereas there are other things that we just don't know. So that's archaeology. I will talk about... we'll probably talk about death in a minute.
I talk about death a lot.
Well, I'll talk about my encounter in a Spanish hotel room watching Neil Oliver later on. You can all hang on in the podcast for that moment. So next official question is, why is cycling cool?
This one caused me some... Well, because I don't consider cycling... When I cycle, I don't do it because it's cool. I do it because I'm too lazy to do anything else. When I go from here to Settle to do my shopping, Settle is just over a mile away, I cannot be bothered to get in the car and then park it. Parking being one of the things I have a little trouble with. I can be bothered to just get on my bike. It's so much less hassle. When I go to work, I can either walk a mile along unlit country roads, take two trains and then walk another mile at the other end, or drive, which requires me to be sentient at 7:30 in the morning, or cycle at both ends and take one train, which requires no sentience at all. I just do it because I'm too idle to do anything else. And then we go on cycling holidays quite a lot, and that's nice because you cover more ground than walking, though we did walk last year, so you get to see a lot, but you still engage with it. You're still like out it. You can stop if you see something interesting along the way without again having to worry how to park. So it's more of a convenience thing for me than, well, it is an ideology, but I don't necessarily think it's cool. I think it's very useful. And of course it means I get to stare at my husband's behind for hours on end.
Yes, I tried to ride a tandem and in China and just failed absolutely completely, but I'm not very good at cycling at the moment because of my back, so it's just actually, I thought on a tandem it would be easier, but I couldn't get the balance
you
thing.
Have to absolutely trust the person in front, and the person in front has to be absolutely trustworthy, and preferably not have one that's the very first tandem I ever rode was felt like it's made out of scaffolding poles, but also flexed, which was a bit worrying. So anything that's like that, we have quite a stiff tandem nowadays, so it doesn't have a mind of its own.
I
wouldn't blame yourself on that one.
I couldn't do it.
Was the person on the front?
Either my husband or one of my daughters.
Because it also helps if they're...
They're taller.
Taller and more, preferably more experienced.
I think probably both, but still not ideal for me. So the death thing, the death questions I've got for you. I've got a really good, this could be an essay question, couldn't it?
Oh yes.
Do you think ancient peoples had better cultic tools to deal with death than we have in the UK today?
Did Lindsay slip you that one?
No, I wrote it all by myself. After I'd seen Lindsay, but I did write it all by myself.
Because the better, of course, is a difficult call. Different and more varied is definitely. And what I think is really valuable about looking at death in the past is that it shows us that our normal isn't the only normal. And in fact, our normal is, if you think about it, a bit weird. Because death is the only inevitability in life, even more inevitable than taxes. And we don't talk about it. We have infinite number of euphemisms for it, and the whole way we deal with death even has changed so much. My father, when my grandfather died, his father said, you know, when his grandfather had died, there'd been deep mourning in the house. They'd all had to look at the body whether they wanted to or not. They were like filed past it. This would have been 1950s Liverpool, and there was the very strict, you know, his little brother was told off for giggling. Whereas the night that his father died, we were there, we were having a beer. I never saw the body. I've been a care assistant, so I've helped lay a few people out, but it's no longer part of the normal grieving process to see the body. So that's absent. We've got this whole, it's sanitised in a way that makes it very difficult to accept, I think, because you don't have that rite of passage. Whereas when I was in Peru, I dug up some Chinchorro remains. It was sort of Chinchorro-ish, pre-ceramic from 4,000 years ago. And what they would do is bury the individual, they're in the Atacama, until they're dried out a bit, probably quite a lot, got the bones, and then covered the bones in red ochre, wrapped the bones in little bundles in string, so we had a child of about 1 to 2, and they'd been treated. Their bones were all wrapped together in little bundles, stuck on with clay. And that to us, obviously that's really weird, because you think about the viscerality of that. Literally, you would be getting a dead body and you would be taking the flesh off and treating the bones. But there's no way that you wouldn't then accept that person was dead. And obviously it's a very alien way of dealing with it. The whole plastered skulls things you would have seen with Lindsay, to us, really weird. But again, a very direct way of engaging. And so whether it's better, hard to say. But certainly thinking about the different ways that people have done this, I think helps to throw our way of dealing with death into sharper relief. And that it's not normal. There is no normal. In the Trobriand Islands, it's quite normal to use the mummified remains of your ancestors as shelves in your house, because they're there, so you might as well use them for something. So there is no normal, and what we do is very much on the one end of the extreme of, to my mind, probably being a bit weird.
Because it's become very medicalised. I guess Lindsay and I, after we stopped recording, talked a bit about how it had become very sanitised, but possibly part of the Industrial Revolution had required that death be taken out of people's houses. You could no longer bury people very locally, so then people began to be more cremated or buried in other places. I'm thinking of Brookman's Park and all those places where you then send the body out of London and all those sorts of things. So we had a good chat about death. The question for me that I asked her about Cain and Abel is this kind of thing which intrigues me. I was watching this programme about Neil Oliver talking about ancient Britons and saying how when there was the first sort of enclosure, an agricultural enclosure, that there was a lot of violence between those who were nomadic and those who were enclosing farmland and making claim to the land.
It's just Oklahoma all over again, isn't it?
But the first recorded death in the biblical narrative of the prehistory is an agriculturalist being killed by a nomad. So that's trying to tell us something about our really ancient understanding of what it means to be human.
Well, another really odd resonance from those very early bits of Genesis, when they eat of the tree of knowledge, God says to Eve, "I will increase your you've eaten of the tree of knowledge, I will increase your difficulty in childbirth." What is the difference between us and the chimpanzees? Our heads, brains are much bigger, and babies are born, by comparison, about 3 months prematurely. Because if they went full term, and obviously baby chimpanzees, they can cling on, they can walk pretty much instantly. But human babies have to be born so much more prematurely, because otherwise they kill their mother because their heads are so big. And so that is literally, your brain gets bigger and difficulty in childbirth has been increased. Now, I'm sure they didn't look at chimpanzees and work this one out.
The problems of bipedalism.
Indeed, yes. Yes, whoever thought that was a good idea. Both of us, I think our backs are telling us that we need another couple of million years to work that all out.
Yes, and of course I ended up having both my children by cesarean section, and the second one I was told that if I didn't I would die.
That's probably a pretty good way of making you make the decision.
Yeah, it wasn't very good for me psychologically
at all.
But that was, and it may not actually have been true, but it probably was true with the first one. But it's like, yes, that's quite focusing the mind there. So the next question, and indeed the last question, is what is your favourite thing which begins with T?
Oh, now this one has caused an immense amount of debate, because my first answer was going to be toast, because obviously if you're having a cup of tea you have toast, although obviously you don't.
I don't have toast anymore. I've had to give up the toast.
Give up toast? You see, this would, if I had to live off one foodstuff, it would be toast. But then I thought, well, there's trees. Now I really do like trees, as you might
have
noticed.
They are very beautiful trees.
Very beautiful trees. And of course there's a tandem on which I spend quite a lot of my life. So really I'm torn. I think it's going to have to be trees though, because of where we're sitting.
They're great. In fact, we might try to take a selfie with the trees behind us in a minute. So, Sarah, thank you having me at your house this afternoon.
Oh, thank you. Lovely to see you after all this time.
It's lovely to see you.